Good morning. We're going to get started. My name is Bob Sproul. I'm a member of the local chapter, Pittsburgh chapter, Forbes Field chapter. Our speaker is Eliza Marone, a native of Virginia, currently a professor of geophysics, which makes her the smartest person in the room, at Penn State University. So her topic, 20-second pitch clock. Eliza, take it away.
All right. So first I want to thank and acknowledge the Pittsburgh Forbes Field chapter because they got to hear a preliminary version of this back in January on Saber Day. And it was a great discussion, and it really helped me figure out the data set I really wanted to collect after that. So since I've phrased the title as like a yes or no question, I'll go ahead and tell you right now that the answer is no. The data set that I've collected convinces me the answer is no, and I guess I'm going to spend the next 15 minutes convincing you too, I hope. All right. But let me just give you the background, because I didn't start thinking about this topic because of the MLB drumbeat about pace of play. I started thinking about this because I'm a Cardinals fan, but I live in Pennsylvania, so I have to watch all their games on MLB TV. And here's something that I noticed. There's a really big difference between watching Carlos Martinez pitch a game, and then you watch Michael Wacha pitch a game, and then the next day, Lance Lynn takes the mound. Wow. And it's like fine if you have a hangover or something and the wheels aren't really turning very fast in your own head, but like, wow, it was different. And I thought, God, he's out there, he's getting shelled, and I wonder if he picked it up a little bit, maybe the defense wouldn't be asleep back there. I don't know. So maybe, maybe it matters. And then, thanks to my husband and StubHub, we managed to get tickets to the NLDS game in 2013 that Michael Wacha pitched against the Pirates right across the river. And if you remember that game, Michael Wacha was on fire. I mean, it was like Pirates batters barely got their feet set, and it was three strikes, and they were sitting down. And that game was a great game to watch if you're a Cardinals fan. And I'm pretty sure that Pirates fans remember this game, too, because if you look at the cover of the recent Sabre publication that's all about the Pirates, there was Michael Wacha on the front, pitching. And I tell you who else was at that game that remembered it too, which is Red Sox scouts, I think. Because if you also remember how the World Series went in 2013, when Wacha was pitching at Fenway Park, it was super obvious that the Red Sox batters had been told to step out and break his rhythm, and especially Johnny Gomes. And it did. It was a completely different game. He did not pitch that well at all. So then I thought, oh yeah, right. I mean, I wonder if rhythm and pitching pace really does make a pitcher better or something. Okay. So then meanwhile, in 2015, AA and AAA implemented this 20-second pitch clock. And so depending on whose fault it is that the at-bat is taking a long time, the umpire's either supposed to call a ball if the pitcher's not ready in 20 seconds, or call strike if the batter is messing around with his gloves with 5 seconds to go. And then I watch a lot of minor league ball, and I can tell you that anecdotally the players say it doesn't really make any difference because it's not really enforced. And also, I feel like if you are a minor league player, I think you pretty much know that the scouts don't want to see you messing with your gloves and standing there. They want to see you play, so they go ahead and do it. But also, then here, okay, so here is also an article, and I won't make you read the whole thing because I'm sure you can read it yourself, from last year in 2017, talking about pace of play, and the average time of a game is getting longer, and that's true, and here's what we're going to do. Maybe we're going to have limit the mound visits, employ a 20-second pitch clock, change the strike zone. So the mound visits thing has happened this year, but then they decided not to go with a 20-second pitch clock. Okay, so there's where we are. Now, meanwhile, this is also trickling down into youth sports. None other than Cal Ripken Jr. has decided that a great way to modify youth baseball is to come up with a whole bunch of rule changes, like, for example, six-inning games. Actually, Little League already has that. Okay, four batters per inning, and we're not going to call any balls and strikes on taken pitches. Also, we're only going to have six fielders and no outfielders, and we're going to have no catchers. And I'm like, you know, I'm all for innovative thinking, Cal, but this sounds a lot to me like two guys in the backyard with cans of beer in their hands at a family reunion who are like, yeah, let's get a game together and here's how it's going to go, right? So why are we doing this? Oh, well, the blue highlighted box tells you it's pace of play. MLB is worried about pace of play and how the game is taking too long and there's not enough action and we're going to try to get, you know, youth. We have to keep them interested in the game. And I agree that it's good if youths are interested in the game. Luckily, when I was reading this article in our local paper, I was sitting next to, at the breakfast table, a couple of all-star Little League players from State College. So I took a chance to ask them what they thought about these rules. And it's not really a ringing endorsement. Sample size 2, but okay. All right. So then after Sabre Day in January, I decided that I was really going to take a real data set and not just complain about Lance Lynn anymore. So this is the actual way that I did it. I watched games with a stopwatch. And my method is you start timing when the ball gets back into the pitcher's glove, assuming that the first pitch of the at-bat's not put into play. And then you stop timing when the pitch is thrown. So you keep track of who's on base, the ball strike count, and who calls time. And when I say who calls time, I just mean anything like that. If it's the batter calling time, if it's the pitcher stepping off the rubber, if the umpire is called time, if there's a cat that runs onto the field, you write that down too. And I'm all about big data sets and automation, so do not tell any of my students that I took all this data by hand, because I spend all my time pounding it into them. I'm a seismologist, and you have to take an automated data approach. You have to be a good programmer. But you know what? I'm not sorry that I did it this way, because baseball is meant to be watched, actually. And there is something really instructive about watching a pitcher through the flow of the game that I think I wouldn't have gotten if I had just figured out an automated way to take 1,000 data points from everybody. All right. So my data set, remember, it's only the time between pitches of the same at-bat. I didn't time in between at-bats or in between innings. And also, the TV feed doesn't always cut back to the pitcher. So especially on long foul balls out of play, they're often showing the fans scrabbling around for the ball. Or sometimes if the catcher appeals to first or third base umpire, then the camera's on him for a while. And then the pitcher's already got the ball back by the time you see him again. So that's just a data point you don't take. But it comes out in the wash when there's 1,000 data points. And I also only have starting pitchers in my database. So I think I just decided to do that because you have to make a cut somewhere if you are taking data by hand. And the time of a game that a starter is there for is way longer than any one reliever, usually. So keep that in mind. All right. So here are the pitchers in my database. I've got exactly one pitcher from every 2018 team and two from the Cardinals. So Lynn is now playing for Minnesota, so handily I got to get rid of them with his data. But I have a mix of data from 2017 and the beginning of this season, too. And you might ask yourself how I came up with these particular guys, and it was a really scientific method that involved asking my friends, who are fans of different teams, who they thought was fast and slow on their team. And then you watch the Red Sox game, and Jerry Remy talks about how fast Chris Sale is, so I'll put him in the data set. Okay, great. And I also wanted a mix of superstars and run-of-the-mill players. So, you know, I've got Max Scherzer and I've got Clayton Kershaw, but I also have Ronaldo Lopez. And then another thing that I did is I went to FanGraphs, because they keep track of pitch pace too. And I made sure that, like, the top and bottom, their fastest and slowest players were in my database too, just so I could compare with them. That seems reasonable. So if your favorite pitcher's not on here, sorry. So anyway, speaking of FanGraphs, here's how they do pitch pace. You just use the PitchFX timestamp, and you have, you know, the time elapsed for your plate appearance, and you divide that by the number of pitches minus one, and then you get an average pitch pace, and then you take that average pitch pace and you average it against all the at-bats for that pitcher, and you have a number. And that's fine. Look, I mean, I'm not yelling at FanGraphs, but because that is the way you have to do it if you are going to have an automated data collection process and get everybody. But doing it this way doesn't take into account the variance that can happen during one at bat. And it turns out that's really interesting, actually. So that's the difference. All right. So let me also give you a 2-minute digression about average values. Sorry. Okay. So here's another thing about if you are going to collect a big data set like this, and especially if you're kind of limited, you don't have every single data point. If you have a distribution that looks like the one that I've drawn here, which is fake data, I just drew it. If it looks like a Gaussian, a normal distribution, a bell curve, and you want the average value, then you just take the mean. That's what you should do. Because the mean will tell you the average value. You know, you've got a distribution on both sides, it looks great. But the pitch-based data is not normally distributed. So if you look at, for example, Carlos Martinez, and the x-axis here is the time that's elapsed between pitches, and then the y-axis is just frequency of occurrence, you can see that this data set does not look at all like the fake data that I drew, right? There's a tail that's only in one direction, and there's a big peak, and it's not where the tail is. It's not in the middle. And this makes physical sense, actually, because there is a hard lower limit on how fast you can get a ball back and throw it again. And in this universe, time only runs in one direction also. So, you know, you're not going to have a negative tail. There's no way. And every single weird thing that can happen in an at-bat that's an anomaly of some sort only ever makes the at-bat longer, never shorter. So the tail is always in one direction, and the peak is always on the other side. And that means you can't just go ahead and take the mean, because the mean will chase an outlier in this case. It's like if you're duck hunting and they're flying in a V, if you just take the mean and you shoot there, you're not going to hit any ducks, because you're going to hit in the middle where none of them are, right? So here is how I took an average value for a data set that looks like this. So I take the middle 50%. So just imagine there's a box around the middle 50%. Then I take the median of that. And that's the average value that I'm going to quote later, the median. But I'm also going to give you the 99% confidence limit. And because I believe in being honest, I'm going to also tell you where the outliers are. All right, so when I quote an average value, it's all going to look like that little box. I ground truthed the outliers, and it turns out that really every one of them is something where they would have stopped the clock anyway because somebody called time or there was a mound visit. So I didn't kick out any of that kind of stuff out of the data set in the first place because I think it's better to not make an arbitrary decision every single time. It's better to write the right algorithm and have it tell you what the right decision is, and then you can go back and pat yourself on the back because it did what you thought it was going to do. All right, so let's check it out. Okay, so here are 31 pitchers, and the x-axis is the time between pitches of the same at-bat when there's nobody on base. And I have the y-axis arranged just in order of fastest to slowest. So Carlos Martinez is down there at the bottom, and Jason Hamill is the slowest pitcher in my database. So the difference between Carlos Martinez and Jason Hamill is 8 seconds on average, which isn't that big. But if you have a starting pitcher who's in there and he throws 100 pitches, that's 800 seconds. And that's like 13 minutes and change, which is huge. That is significant. But the 20-second clock is never going to get us there. You know why? Because there's where 20 seconds is. And the 20-second clock is only going to be enforced when there's nobody on base. And even watching paint dry, Jason Hamill gets it in there under 20 seconds almost all the time. It is encouraging as a scientist and a Cardinals fan that my off-the-cuff observation about the difference between Lynn and the other Cardinal pitchers was right, because if you look at the bottom, there's Carlos Martinez and Michael Wacha close behind, and if you see where Lynn is, he's like fifth from the top. Slow, just like I thought. So that's good. All right, but anyway, I do have a database from when there are runners on base, so let's check that out. Now check out the x-axis, see how it goes all the way to 110 seconds? So most pitchers are between 6 and 10 seconds slower when all of a sudden there's runners on base. And that makes sense, doesn't it? I mean, look, they're pitching out of the stretch. They've got other stuff to think about. If there's a man on second, they're probably going through a different series of signs. You know, if it's Billy Hamilton on first, they're worried about what he's going to do, so they're throwing to first and stuff like that. And actually, that's baseball. It's interesting to watch a pitcher have to think about these things. I mean, I would say that when Junior Guerra takes the mound and there's runners on base, you could air like an entire 30-second Old Spice ad in between every one of his pitches. And that's a little extreme. But the problem is that, you know, the 20-second clock isn't going to be enforced in this situation. And that's a good thing, too, because nobody's getting under 20 seconds, basically, right? Remember how the old plot, everybody was under it? Well, in this plot, there's only like 5 guys who are. But the 20-second clock's not going to help us. Not here. So, all right. Well, I do appreciate that these are actual guys, not just numbers. And I heard what Clint Hurdle said yesterday, that there's a heartbeat attached to all these people. So instead of just showing stats in an aggregate way, it's actually really cool to look at one game and one pitcher and see how the game kind of goes. Because if you do just look at pitch pace, you can see a lot about what he's thinking during the game or not thinking. And we certainly don't have time to go through all of them, but we can go through a couple for sure. So we'll start with the long-suffering Homer Bailey, who's kind of slow. And also my husband's a Reds fan, so he's even more long-suffering. So here's a game that he pitched a month ago against the Pirates. And I was trying to figure out the best way to sort of show this data, and so here's what I came up with. So each of those stems is an elapsed time between pitches, and they're all scaled. The horizontal line is where 20 seconds is. So if I can just take you through this game, you can see at the beginning, he's kind of under 20 seconds. He's a little slow, and he ends up walking somebody. Those are all little white stems because nobody's on base until the walk. Now there's somebody on base, and that's really a bummer because he has to hold the ball for over a minute and throw the first 2 times. And then that didn't work out too well because he gives up a home run. Well, now there's nobody on base anymore, so we're fast again, kind of. But then there's a hit, 43 seconds, throws to first. And then check this, though. I kind of like this because, see, right after the 43 seconds where he throws to first, he doesn't think too hard, it doesn't take too long, and he gets a double play ball. Nice job. All right. But then there's a walk and a hit, 43 seconds. The batter calls time, so that's not really his fault. Then there's another inning where the 82 seconds where he throws to first 3 times, then another throw to first, another throw to first. By this time, there's more guys on base. He fakes the throw to second. Batter calls time. And that was all Josh Harrison, too, dancing around to first base, giving him a hard time. You know, finally there's more hits, he's out of the game. So hold this picture in your head, because I'm going to show you what it looks like when you've got a fast pitcher on the mound. All right, so look at what this looks like, and just prepare to be amazed. There's Carlos Martinez at the same scale. Wow, different, isn't it? Right? So all those little white marks where there's nobody on base, I mean, he gets it, and sometimes it's 6 seconds, 7 seconds. Man, when he's clicking and he's not injured, it is a fast game. And I also want to point out that, you know, of the little outliers that I've marked, you know, twice it's because runners were on and he was throwing to first base. But the other 3 times, it was the batter's fault. So at some level, when we're talking about pace of play and we talk about pitch pace, it probably would be better to say at bat pace, because the batters are equally to blame for making things take a long time. So this is cool. I like this. It seems to me that if I were the players union and I realized that the 20-second pitch clock wasn't going to matter, then I guess I could use that as a negotiating tool. Oh, yeah, I guess we'll accept the 20-second pitch clock, but here's what we want. Because they, you know, On the other hand, I'm thinking if you're, you know, ownership or something and you want pitchers to pick it up, then they'll do it on their own if it turns out that being faster makes you better, like if it correlates with some other measure of pitching success. So we can check that out. So here we go. So here's pitch pace when the bases are empty. So pitch pace is on the x-axis, and the top plot is winning percentage, and the middle plot is whip, and the bottom is ERA. And I don't really see any correlations here, do you? So the top plot, if it were true that you won more games when you were faster, then there should be kind of like a negative slope from left to right. And then the other two should have an increasing slope from left to right, but I think they're just scattered. So, nope. When there's runners on base, you might think that would correlate with one of these, because in fact, that's how you get scored on, right? They have to be on base first, usually. And I, certainly there's no correlation with WHIP or ERA, and I guess you could maybe argue that there's a little bit of a correlation with winning percentage, except I think your eyes are just drawn by the two big outliers. That's Junior Guerra over on the far right, taken forever. And I think it's James Paxton on the top left. But if you took those two data points away, it would just be a cloud, I think. I didn't try to draw a line through this. So, but here's another interesting thing that I thought of, too. If, let's say that that your consistency of pace might be what's important for pitching success. Then what you want to look at is the difference between when you are, the difference between your pace when there's runners on or not. Like, how much time does it take? And here I think, I don't think there's any correlation with WHIP or ERA, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say there is a weak correlation with winning percentage. So if you kind of, you know, tilt your head and squint a little, if it looks to me like most of the left side of the plot up on top is the higher winning percentage and the other side is less. And I think this goes back to my original point about Michael Wacha, right? If you have a consistent pace no matter what's going on and you don't let the runners rattle you or the batters, maybe it's better for you. So that's not really an argument for pitching faster, just keeping a rhythm. All right. So I'll let you read these conclusions, but I'm going to say it again. The biggest single factor that influences pitch pace is if there's runners on base or not, by far. 20-second pitch clock is not going to help because when there's nobody on base, everybody does it. Pitchers have an incentive to maintain a constant pace, not necessarily a fast one. And also, it's also the batter's fault for the time of game. But I also want to talk about just the very last thing. When the game slows down when runners are on base, it means that if you increase the action by putting more balls into play, that is the opposite of shortening a game, because that's when pitchers are slow. So, thanks a lot. I can take a couple of questions.
That was very good. The obvious question is, would a 15-second clock tweak things just a little bit, even if it's psychologically, to get pitchers to, you know?
I mean, or you could just say that as soon as you get the ball back, you have to throw. I mean, there's sort of a, I don't know. I think, I guess if it were me and I wanted to make things faster, I would try to think of everything I could do and make sure I'd exhausted all the possibilities that didn't have to do with how the game is actually played. But it's not me.
Yeah, I would argue against your conclusion here. I go to a lot of minor league games.
Okay.
And the 15-second clock, what they're using this year for the first pitch, I think has really shortened the game. When it was enforced, the first 6 weeks of the season, the umpires were pointing to the batters, pointing to the pitchers, getting them in the box, and I saw the games 20 to 25 minutes shorter.
Yeah.
However, the last 6-8 weeks, I've noticed the umpires have sort of given up on it, and it goes back maybe to one of the points. These are great rules, but nobody enforces them. And I don't think it's a problem with the rule. I think it's a problem with the umpires and the owners refusing to enforce the rules. The same thing like getting out of the batter's box and wandering back to the dugout every play. That's against the rules, but we don't enforce it.
I agree.
And I think it's a good rule if we would just put our minds to it to actually do it.
You know, in Little League, they make the kid keep their foot in the box the whole time, and the umpires tell them. And then they listen because they're 10, but, you know. It's right.
So you hit on it up there. I just wanted to emphasize it. Slow pace is equally the fault of the batters. We've got so many batters that every pitch, they step out of the box, adjust the gloves, every pitch. So if instead of the pitch clock, if there's some rule that they can't do that, so to speak. So.
Well, that, I mean, that's part of the rule that's supposed to be enforced. And I agree with you. It's that's annoying to watch. But it's not enforced. So it's harder to collect a data set to prove that, too, because it's much easier to watch one pitcher, and it's much harder to collect, like, a batter-centric to find out, like, who's the worst offender as a batter. Then, I mean, it can be done, clearly, but it's not as easy to just sit in your office with a stopwatch when you're supposed to be doing something else, you know. Don't tell my department how I said that. We have one more question.
So the correlations, I think the old Ray Miller approach was, you know, work fast, but the reason is to keep your fielders engaged.
Yeah.
So I wonder if you could compare the difference in fielding percentage or range or whatever, any more exotic or esoteric fielding measures for the fast guy versus the slow guy, and if there's any, you know, correlation between that.
I agree. I think that's a good data set. It's what I started to do at the beginning, actually. And the problem is that you, well, for my data set, you have to collect a different one because you really want pitchers who are all on the same team, who have a different pace than each other, because then you are at least comparing the same fielders without having to go to another bunch of fancy statistics. You know what I mean? Yeah. Right. I feel like I've seen that too, right? I mean, you watch a guy and the defense is sitting there, and then even if it's not an error, they weren't ready to go after the ball, so then, yeah, yeah. Thanks a lot again.
Thank you, Eliza, and I'll just give